It is a pleasure to introduce our speaker, Ebe Sapone Cavagnaro, already known to many Commonwealth Club members as teacher of the club's weekly Italian class, Mondays at noon. She was born in Tuscany and earned her doctoral degree at the University of Pisa. She moved to San Francisco after World War II. Among many accomplishments, Ebe performed a considerable service for the San Francisco School District by establishing and directing its foreign language program. She has helped our international relations forum many times, arranging fine programs on various aspects of Italian culture and society. Ebe Sapone Cavagnaro usually returns to her beloved Italy, and especially to Tuscany, once or twice a year. Let's now warmly welcome her for this look at the amazing Leonardo da Vinci.
Well, thank you, Norma, but you said too much about me. And I hope that they don't expect that much. As I said, I am a Toscana, Toscanaccia, my husband calls me. Toscanaccia means a Toscan snob. And now you know why I'm a Toscan snob. Toscan is the land of Dante Alighieri, the Italian language, all the famous artists, Michelangelo and Leonardo da Vinci, they are all from Tuscan. So why can I not be proud of being Tuscan? And let my husband, who is instead of partly of, shall I call the Genovese origin? And you know what the Genovese are like. They are merchants. They like money. And so they don't like the Tuscan people because they are too cultural. So I hope that you forgive me. My voice is kind of down today. And my head is a little bit spinning like Leonardo's head. Leonardo's head was not always in its place. You know, poor Leonardo was born in a little town near Florence, in Tuscany, naturally. His father that had him with illegally. I mean, he was not a son of a proud family. I mean, the father, I guess he had slept with a slave from the middle. Orient and had come to Italy and had Leonardo. But Leonardo was never recognized as the son of Sir Pier da Vincoli. So he got the name of Leonardo from Vincoli. His life was always confused and disturbed a little. Disturbed because of his background, of course. And disturbed because his mind had too much in it. And he didn't know what to use, what to reject, what to keep. He was a writer. He was an artist, of course. He was a sculptor. He was a person that knew all about physiology, anatomy, and so forth. That is very, very important to him. So he was always kind of insecure of what to do, what to paint, where to go. He was working with the Medici family in Florence. Everybody has heard of the Medici family, I'm sure, even from the Michelangelo. And he has worked in the shop of Verrocchio. You have heard Verrocchio's shop. Some of you have. And if you haven't, you are hearing it now. So what's wrong? What's wrong with that? I pronounce it the Italian way, Verrocchio. It has two C's, H, I, O at the end. But that is actually the case for Leonardo da Vinci. He went back and forth from Florence to Milan, from the from one shop to another shop. He never knew where he was. You know, he ended up really even dying in France because he had been to France, to Chateau d'Amboise and whatever. But he had so much on his mind that you wouldn't believe it. He was a writer also. He wrote a little book that had about 1,300 pages, not a little, but, and that was called I Pensieri. Pensieri in Italian means thoughts. It's thoughts. I Pensieri. And that was quite an interesting book that is still existing. He had prepared many codes, many places. And there are some codes also in the U.S. by the Getty family that, you know, had so he was quite knowledgeable and quite confused, not knowing where he was, what he wanted to be. He wanted to be a scientist. And you know that he had invented many tools, many things, had invented as a scientist, even the way of cutting through waters. They attribute to him the according to his principle, the cutting of the ocean between the Mexico and the Pacific Ocean, you know, the Atlantic and Pacific, and that was also quite interesting that, you know, was attributed to the knowledge of his instruments, even though that came much later. But it was attributed that Leonardo, as a painter, we cannot find a better artist, a better painter. In fact, at times, you know, Michelangelo was a little jealous of him, and you know that is very important. But then when he went to Milan, called by the Ludovico Sforza, he went to Milan, the Lord of Milan had given him some projects, and one was that famous last supper. Everybody knows the Last Supper. In fact, I have tried to, since we did not have here a way of showing it in an enlargement, I don't know why, but I thought that I would make it something like this to show you. Thank you.
apostles, and you can see even Judas, you know, the one that he was the mean one, that he, that's right, that he wanted to be with him, and I'm sorry, I cannot do better than this, but we had Judas, right here, Judas, right there. And it's not to be confused with Saint Jude. This is Judas, the mean guy. They betrayed Jesus. You know a little bit about that. And then all the rest of now. This is a painting on a wall. You may think that is actually a dining room, a table, but it's a painting. It looks like a dining room table. It's a painting in the cathedral, La Cattedrale della Grazia, whatever. The cathedral. That was here. And that was the place where the nun would eat. Would eat, I mean, did I say
microphone. Yeah, better to use the microphone. They can't hear you.
Then I guess. I guess you might be able to hear me much better, okay? Even though my throat today is not particularly well and so on. But this is the famous cenacolo. The cenacolo. I cenacolisti. They were the people that sat at the table there, and for the Last Supper. It's also called the Last Supper. And you can see that they are sitting there, and all of this, there is St. Peter's and all the important people of the times, but there is also Judas here. He was the traitor. He was the real traitor. He pointed out where Jesus was so that he could be killed. And that is the reason why it's called the Last Supper. The Last Supper, the last time they ate together. And this Last Supper is quite interesting. It's quite interesting. It's a place that attracts so many tourists in Milan. Think about it. When you go to Milan, how many of you have been to Milan here? Oh, have you been to see Last Supper? How many saw the Last Supper? Well, enough. That's enough. But I suggest that when you go to Milan next time, you go to see this beautiful painting. And that is in that church called Santa Maria delle Grazie. This church was the church where there were nuns. It was a dining room for nuns. And that was on the wall. So it made the nuns feel that, you know, they were eating with Jesus, I guess. I suppose. But there was the beautiful mean of that church, and there was in a building located out of grounds. I mean, you have to walk into it, you know. You said that many of you have been to the church, and that building is the refectory, the dining room, which was originally the dining room for where the sisters had their meals. And so that's very important. Now, the other thing that Leonardo da Vinci did, he not only painted this Last Supper, but he painted the famous Mona Lisa. You have heard of the Mona Lisa. Here I try to enlarge, because we cannot show anymore in this Commonwealth Club the pictures under the, you know, to enlarge that machine, or call it whatever, to enlarge and to do what. So here I put this Mona Lisa. The smile on the Mona Lisa is incredible. His eyes are down to the smile, his mouth here. And it's really, it's supposed to be a very a person that smiles, and it's called the Mona Lisa. It's also known as La Gioconda. You have heard of that? So that is what is important to know also. La Gioconda was the daughter of Giocondo, anyway, somebody important in Milan, and that was the name of that. It's very... Leonardo da Vinci painted also the La Vergine delle Rocce. And I like you to see le rocce, how precise it was in the reproducing nature, the rocks, the forest. And that is what is very important about the water, the roof. Anyway, I will pass this around in a moment if you like to see them a little more correctly. And this is also a famous painting. Too bad that I did not have a way of showing it through it. But this is the famous painting, and it's the Adoration of the Magi. You know, when the Magi came to see that Jesus was born. And that is, here they are. That's the Madonna with Jesus. And these are the Magi that are bending down with reverence, you know, that you can probably, you can see, I will pass it around. And that's very, very important and very good. And another painting, it's the Annunciation. Some of you have seen that. It's the Annunciation, and it's very, very important. That's it in Florence, in the Galleria degli Uffizi. I'm sure there's some of you who have gone to Florence have been to the Galleria degli Uffizi. And that is the painting of that in the Galleria degli Uffizi. And this is the Annunciation, when the angel came to let the Virgin know that she was expecting a child, Jesus would come. And that is a very, very important. And look at the nature. Leonardo always depicted trees, nature, and made you feel like that was extended, that you were actually looking at something with the background, a real background. Instead, this is just a... as you see the picture of the, because Leonardo was very much in love with nature. He studied nature, he studied astronomy, he studied, you name it, and he did it. I mean, he studied sciences, of course, and art, and he really had a very interesting background in all of those subjects, and I thought maybe you might want to see them. Shall I pass them around, you think?
Yes.
Oh, yes. He was also an architect, absolutely. And can you pass them around? They might like to see that. And the thing is that Michelangelo Leonardo, I don't know why I always said Michelangelo in my mind, but... they were both Tuscans, so so that was okay. But Leonardo had the genius of all. He was the genius of all geniuses. So he was also a painter, a sculptor, an architect, and whatever you can think of, besides being a scientist and whatever. So that is very, very important. Now, in the when he was in the workshop of Verrocchio, there were other artists of the time that were in the workshop of Verrocchio. And the one time, Leonardo had done something or said something, and everybody was against him, upset with him. I mean, but that didn't matter much, because Leonardo was used to suffering, anyway.
What did he say? That they were all upset?
He was upset. The other people. Yeah, he had said something. Let's see if I can quote it and find it. He had said, here, this is, he collaborated with Verrocchio in his Baptism of Christ painting, the young angel holding Jesus' robe in a manner that was so far superior to his master's that Verrocchio put down his brush and never painted again. That was kind of insulting on the part of Verrocchio to do that for Leonardo because of that. And that is a very, very important quote. And he had invented a new technique of oil paint, the landscape, the rocks that you see in the back there, that can be seen through the brown mountain and stream, and much of the figure of Jesus hearing witness to the hand of Leonardo. I guess that is about what happened. Now the other things that I am not here to show is the Leonardo continued staying work in Milan, and he was commissioned to paint the Virgo of the Rocks for the Church, the Immaculate Conception, and the Natural, the Last Supper, while he was in Milan. Those two came for that commission, and he had gotten money for it. And when he was close, they realized that he knew. The money that he was having, he had to, of course, declare it for his tax reason, the way we do now. And he showed that he was giving some money to a woman that was supposed to have been his mother and died very young. So that money that was given to her came out from that region, came out from the fact that he was claiming it as her mother for tax purposes. And then she died very young. And Leonardo continued working, accumulating. He was accumulating a lot of money. He was an idealistic person, but he knew the value of money. So when he died, he left this money to a very good friend of his by the name of Melzi. Melzi, you know, there is also a vocabulary, Italian dictionary made by Melzi, but that is, I don't think has anything to do with this Melzi, because there are many, many years difference. And he left that money to Melzi, and for that he kept and then donated or spent. Melzi was a wealthy person that donated and spent it for the church, and it was very, very good. And also Leonardo, with his money, when he was called to France by the King of France, Francis I, whatever, and he had bought a place up there, a house of his own, with the money. So he died in his own house in Amboise, you know, Chateau d'Amboise. That was the place where he had, and he died there. And he left all of his money to this friend, and this friend was divided with the artists of the times of Leonardo, among whom they had naturally Michelangelo, but that is not the only one. They had the Accademia del Verrocchio, and they had the Ghiberti, and you know, the famous doors of Ghiberti in Florence, across from the baptistry door, you know, and across from the church, from the the Duomo, across from the Duomo. And he really had done a lot of work. He had also tried to relocate the statue of David in Florence, and that's where David still is. He relocated it in the so-called Accademia delle Arti, and that was also a doing of Leonardo. So he was involved in a lot of things that now it's a little bit confusing to me to remember exactly what and where. He was the I was going to check here what the he was a contemporary artist of Ghirlandaio, Perugino, and a Sicilian painter, Antonello da Messina, that probably you have heard, who worked exclusively in as a business person in oil and perhaps the I guess that's about it. I didn't finish, but my voice and my mouth is getting too dry. Yes.
I was wondering how did Leonardo da Vinci learn all these things?
What
experiences did he have to learn all this astronomy and science?
Well, that is. He had studied in one of the schools there of the Medici, you know, and he had learned all of that. He was a good person to study and learn a lot. And therefore, he applied his knowledge to nature, to water. He could see far away, he could see everything. So actually, that's the way it did. However, I'm sorry, I cannot continue on. Al, you want to take over, or Norma? Norma, I am sorry that I told you that I was not even going to try to do it. But
I know Abbe had mentioned that she was, her voice is bothering, and also she felt a little dizzy. Her husband, Al Cavagnaro, attorney here in San Francisco, is also quite a student of Italy, and Abbe had mentioned that he was prepared to help her out if needed. So, Al, maybe if you have, if the audience has any questions, you can give us a try.
I'll try to take questions. I'm the former president of something called the Leonardo da Vinci Society, which does not make me an expert in Leonardo. My own field, as some of you know, is more specifically Garibaldi, but I know a little bit about Leonardo too. Yeah. I have my fix on that. I have my fix on that at two levels. Number one, as you say, he was a genius. And number two, I've known some people in my life who, if I hold this hand up and I look at this hand, I see a hand. I've known some people who actually see the fingerprints. And I suspect that Leonardo, this is just my own fix, I've never read this anyplace, but I suspect that he had the tremendous powers of perception in addition to the intellectual genius that enabled him to be such a diverse human being. Yes. She was trying to say that. Yeah, I think he, it may have been a little, joke is not the right word, but to think that he's making this painting in a refectory, which is a dining room where the nuns are sitting down to eat dinner, and it's almost like they're eating with Jesus and the 12 apostles. And if you look at that painting, I was looking at it before, and yes, It has, even though it's a square table, I mean rectangular, there is an element of perspective that makes it look like, you know, it's multidimensional. And I think that's, like I say, it might have been a joke, which may be the wrong word, but, you know, it might have been a humorous thing on his part, or a completing the wonder of what he was doing. And this painting took him 3 years to do. Sometimes he would work 2 hours a day. Sometimes he would just stand there and think it out, and until he would decide how he would handle. There was a big thing about the faces of the various apostles. Now, I can't tell you who those faces are, but if you look at that, at the Last Supper, I know a few of those faces. I think at one time I might have known all of them. Art historians have determined who those faces are, you know, which apostle is which. But to our left, to Jesus' right, is, of course, John the Evangelist, as the gentleman was talking about the Da Vinci Code before. Dan Brown, of course, said that was really Mary Magdalene. Thank you. Yeah, that helps. I don't know whether I have to hold it up or not. But then to the, this is to Jesus' right, that's John the Evangelist, the beloved apostle, so-called. And then between him and this guy with his elbow on the table is St. Peter, okay? And the setting for this is supposed to have been Jesus saying to his apostles, "One of you is about to betray me." That was 1 minute, that was 1 second before the scene portrayed here. And they're throwing up their hands, they're saying, you know, "Is it I, Lord?" and all that kind of stuff. And interestingly, the guy next to St. Peter with his elbow on the table, that's Judas. And apparently, you didn't put your elbow on the table in the 16th century, just like you're not supposed to put your elbow on the table today. But that might have been Leonardo's little jab at Judas. But there was a lot of effort put into putting faces on the various apostles. Yeah. You know what I think? I think he was probably, I just met you, but I think he was a lot like you. I think he was, we're talking about personality now. I hope you're a genius and all that too. But I think he was gregarious and friendly. I believe that. As far as his, the women in his life, were painted women in his paintings who were abundant and beautiful. By abundant, I mean round and, you know, that kind of abundant. There's no evidence that I know of or have ever heard of his being romantically involved. Let's put it that way. Well, you know, I didn't want to say that, but, you know, it's just like, I have heard it suggested. Let's put it that way. Yes, sir.
Do we know anything about how young he actually started doing this creative work? I mean, what were his earliest works? And also, what about the Leonardo da Vinci Society that you were part of? What are you doing?
Oh, they do not study Leonardo da Vinci very much. They simply have him as an icon or, a kind of the universal man of the Renaissance who is their guiding spirit, you might say. They support various aspects of Italian culture. They have cultural programs on all aspects of Italian culture, rarely Leonardo da Vinci. But anybody else, Michelangelo, Raphael, et cetera, so what was the first part of your question? How old was he? He was born in 1451, and he died in 1519, giving you an idea. Now, his early career was in Florence, of course, where I guess his father or someone in the city of Vinci, I don't know if you know about Vinci. Vinci is perhaps, I seem to remember it's maybe like 20 miles from Florence or 20 or 30 miles from Florence, perhaps. They sent him in there and they put him under in this workshop and everything. And at an early age, he had this tremendous curiosity. And I seem to remember that he liked to dissect bodies. And there was one in particular. There was one instance in particular that is recorded, but I don't know whether this was considered a very nice thing to do back in those times, and I think there was a lot of criticism of that. But from the earliest age, that's how he really discovered anatomy, and in fact, he even had a depiction of a baby in a woman's womb, one of his artworks of. One of his sketches, you might call it. So I would say this probably started developing in the 1570s, you know, when he was a teenager and in his 20s. Of course, the sojourn in Milan, the Last Supper, was specifically 1495 to 1498. The sojourn in Milan. And then I think Sforza fell. I know there are some art historians in this room, and I want to be careful what I say, but I think that Ludovico Sforza fell. In other words, he was overthrown. And around that time, Leonardo left and went to different cities in Italy. I'm not sure. Valentina, was he in Bologna? I believe he was, wasn't he? Yes. I beg your pardon?
They had a school of medicine in Bologna.
Yes. Okay. Valentina is.
Wasn't that one of the things?
Yeah,
it was in the watching
I wanted to acknowledge Valentina Imbeni, who is the daughter of the former mayor of Bologna, whose her father is now being deceased, but she's present with us today, and we're very. I knew her before, and I'm very happy to see her. But anyway, that. Tells you something definitive about his sojourn in Bologna. So anyway, and then in the 1500s, I guess he went to France and went back to Italy and then came back to France and spent the last years of his life in France. Yes.
So around how old was he
when? Well, let's see, 1451 to, I'm pretty sure, 1519. Don't any of the Sharpies hold me to that, but I think that's 68 years old. Yes, sir.
Is enough known about Leonardo's parents to know if they ever exhibited the same kind of brilliance that Leonardo had?
I have never seen anything about the mother, except that he lived with the mother. Now, Ebbe said before the mother died young, and I had not known that she was reputed to be a slave from the Middle East, which she announced before. I hadn't known that. But she was a person of, how can I say this? I can't say it nicely and kindly, a person of lower standing compared to the father who was a notary public. I have never heard anything to indicate that his parentage or other people in the family were gifted geniuses or anything like him. I mean, he was really a unique human being, no question about it. Yes, Norma.
Can you comment at all on some of his scientific accomplishments? And also, I wonder, I know he is reputed to have designed weapons and bridges, and I wonder if some of that was put to practical use. Was some, any of that on commission or just a hobby?
No, I think it was all done. It was a hobby, yes, but it was all done with a practical flavor to it. There were... He did military inventions for the persons for whom he was dedicated at that particular time, the people who employed him. I am trying to remember specifically. I believe he may have, you know, contemplated submarines and various things like that. I'm trying to draw a little bit of a blank on specific applications. There were specific warlike applications of his work designed. Oh, the flying machine, yes. Well, he's got some of the sketches are, you know, wings and everything. I guess he probably had some appreciation of aerodynamic principles. Nowadays, of course, it's easy for us to realize that when the pressure below is increased over the pressure above, the plane is going to rise. But he was more trying to simulate the flight of birds. I think that was his methodology. Yes, sir?
I just wanted to add to that answer about specific weapons that he was devising. One of the weapons was, in those days, they used to have these moats that surrounded these forts, and so he devised a way in which there would be a vehicle that would just go there and just create a bridge, a movable bridge, plus also these catapults that would haul huge boulders across onto the port.
I've recently seen that, yes, in fact, within the last couple of days, you know, with some of the materials that's been laying around. They had an armored tank, which, you know, a protective device. I don't know how it was motivated. I don't know if it was, you know, horse-drawn or what, but it looked like a modern-day tank. Is there anything else that I can try to answer? Thank you, Norma.
I hope she's feeling okay. And we want to thank both Ebbe and Al Cavagnaro for a unique and special enlightening program. Thank you so much.
It's called a husband wife tandem, I guess that might be. At least that's the way it worked out.
Good.
Thank you very much for coming, everybody.
Yes, thank you for coming.